Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 961. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Oh, you know, it always seems... this week it did not seem like I was cramming wrestling in. Because I watched AEW live, I only had to watch NXT today. When I've got to watch both shows on a Thursday, it gets a little hairy. Watch AEW live, and I guess the one thing that struck me is that it seems wise that MJF. He seems to have confirmed here now, especially, that he has re-signed again for an undisclosed amount of time.
I don't think he was ever in any way off contract. I think he'd already been
signed to
a deal, and, you know, back when the original issues happened 2 years ago. Now. I think then there was an extension to an existing deal that put him on financially the level of, you know, your Moxley's, your Jericho's, etc. Because understandably, when AEW started, he would not have been.
Right, and that seems like a correct spot to put him in.
Yeah, he. You know what? I know some people aren't the biggest fans. Sometimes I'm not either. But he is the biggest homegrown star AEW has made. And it's not even close.
I mean, I guess you could argue he's the only one.
You could probably make a only one. But depending on what you count. If you say that, you know, Elite and Kenny's reputations from New Japan and Ring of Honor preceded them, I mean, it's not the same as WWE TV that and even in Jericho's case, WCW TV, which is insane.
Yes.
If you really think about it, You know, it's not the same, but, you know, once again, they were who they were. They brought some, a large part of the initial fan base was there to see them.
Oh, yeah.
So once again, no, of the people who were more toiling on the lower level independence, who AEW, your AIW and below type, AIW, GCW like type promotions.
Yep.
When they were signed by AEW. Yeah, it's MJF for sure, and then the other one would probably be Orange Cassidy.
And you could add Darby Allin to the list too.
Darby Allin, yeah.
So I mean,
once again, but certainly would put. go ahead. Repeat that. Sorry.
No, I just don't think the list is longer than those three.
I don't think that. No, because I would not say that, you know, Jungle Boy has gotten really got or Jack Perry has really gotten over. I would not say that Sammy Guevara was ever made it anywhere near the level they wanted him to be, you know, even though they tried to force it multiple times. You know, we could certainly talk about how a lot of people for the last 3 to 5 years have felt like they've been in the exact same place. We've had these discussions ad nauseum, so no need to have them again, you know, as it applies to the show we're reviewing. Maybe we'll have some of those types of discussions, but. Yeah, no, it's MJF, you know, once again, not a lot of people, not always the biggest fan, especially in corners of the internet and wrestling Twitter that I'm in, but he gets a reaction from the crowd every time. The shows did feel emptier without him.
I think that's the thing that I've really, like, I'm like, there just feels like there's a different dynamic. I do think that even with him around, it does seem like the crowds have still been, how do you say, lackluster? So that's hurting everyone in general. But it does kind of feel like the product has a little bit different energy with MJF around, because he really was their focal point for a long time, and no one really stepped up in the meantime.
No, that has been a big problem. I mean, they had to sell a pay-per-view around Sting. they had a, they had Dynasty, which was a, considered a great show, but maybe not necessarily the biggest show. Yeah, it definitely feels like, MJF being back around will definitely make things interesting. Now, what he does in the meantime, before they put him back in the world title scene, however long that's going to take, that will be interesting. Roosh is a talented guy. He really could use someone to talk for him. And he's one of those people who appears on AEW TV very intermittently. We go weeks and weeks without seeing him.
Yeah, and I feel like not just in AEW, but it would happen to someone during his Ring of Honor run also. I believe he's been out a couple of times because of injury, and that really does not do him any favors. Like, I do feel like the man has missed a decent chunk of time due to injury, and yeah, there is a real, like, as much as Roosh could be on MJF's level, or I even maybe mentally think of him that way, how he's been presented on AEW TV does not make me feel that way. You know, like, he just doesn't, like, because I saw his championship very short run to the championship in Ring of Honor, like, I guess I saw what he could do, and I've been impressed, but none of that has come through on AEW TV, and that's been a couple of years now. You know, that he's been over there, just kind of struggling for TV time.
No, I can't. I vaguely remember a match, a really physical match, but I think it was him and Darby Allin, I think it was. That may have been the only thing I can remember him doing. And yeah, there's just not much that he's done. Once again, he's just not around enough to get any kind of consistent momentum going. So it's just, I mean, it's just a match for MJF to win. I mean, it's really what it is. Does he get him back going? But MJF does thrive on having feuds and storylines more interesting than, "Grr, I want to fight you," and that's all this can be. And of course, I did get a chuckle of MJF mentioning, "Yeah, I'll be at Forbidden Door, and my opponent's gonna be some guy from from Japan or Mexico." That sums it up pretty well.
That did make me laugh quite a bit. Because I guess that was one of those things that I was thinking about this week when I'm like, I guess I was thinking about what was it? Was it the 8-man match this week with the CMLL guys and
I don't remember any of their names. They all lost. Yay.
Well, yeah, it was one of those things, and I'm like, I guess if you insist on doing that, I want more information than, why am I blanking on his name? The main announcer,
Excalibur?
Excalibur. He's got to do his like Microman impersonation and, like rattle off all of their cover sheets to start the match, and it's just like, you compare that to just the WWE bringing in Jordynne Grace, and I guess I just felt like she's kind of had the time to breathe and show why she's a big deal. And AEW just throw these guys on TV.
And this is a continuation of something that they dropped like 2 months ago. Because that's when they were doing the stuff with the CML guys.
Well, yeah.
And then they stopped. And now we're getting into our season. Because there's no novelty left for the New Japan to New Japan guys coming over at all. AEW signed three of them full time, and their guy is IWGP champion. You know, there is no more novelty than to these New Japan guys coming over at all. So then we're gonna try to put some other, but then it just doesn't. Mercedes Moné is wrestling someone that until last week I had never heard her name before. Now, I am way deep in the weeds of this wrestling stuff. Way deep. I mean, not as deep as some people, but I'm pretty damn deep. I had never heard of this woman before. Never heard her name. Like, there's so many people, like, I've never seen them wrestle on the independents or internationally or whatever, but I've at least heard their name before. There's something about their reputation. I have never heard or read this woman's name before in my life.
That was something that I hadn't really thought about, but I'm with you. Like, I think.
Have you watched CMLL?
No.
Jeremy does. Jeremy watches CMLL.
No. I'm trying to think of what's free on YouTube. It's not CMLL. What's
AAA?
AAA, because that's Conan's brand. Yeah. So, different company. So, yeah. Oh, okay. But yeah, like I have not come across her name either. Like for as much wrestling as I've gotten in, and I mean, I guess she did. They did mention that she took her on in New Japan, so maybe it would have come across my desk. But I guess I didn't care about Mercedes Moné being over in New Japan anyway.
Right. No, it's
like, this is a dream for her to fulfill, and I'm glad she did it. But I don't care.
This is part of the reason why they're doing Ospreay and Swerve at Forbidden Door. We find out the other reason later in the show. We'll get to that. Yes. But yeah, no, MJF. They definitely need to get, you know, a win here, a win there. But they need, if he's not going to be in the world title scene in the near future, they need to have him in something important and in a feud. It still seems like Adam Cole is a while away from being medically cleared.
Yeah, especially with the way, and I mean, I know that it was at the pay-per-view itself that MJF kind of blew off.
He absolutely did. Yes, he just absolutely blew him off. Yes, so M. Cole's not going to be around for a while. You know, the Undisputed Kingdom is dead. I mean, that's just that thing. I mean, but if he needed someone, dead, I guess.
Wow, they are really trying to push Roderick Strong, but that can be for something later too.
That is such a fool's errand. He's a clown. They made him a clown last year. There's no going back. They'll be taking him seriously again. And even then, did you know what it sounds like to have some guy most wrestling fans have never heard of before call himself a wrestling legend? Let's be brutally honest. Most wrestling fans have never heard of Roderick Strong.
Yeah, I mean, when you haven't made it to really any of the big shows, it's kind of tough to crack the popularity scale.
Right. MJF definitely, you know, I actually think it's good to have him. It's good that he's back. It does create new good energy for the show. They definitely need to find a good opponent for him, you know, soon. Once again, Roosh is just a match to, you know, get him back going. if he ends up wrestling somebody else that Forbidden Door, you know, once again, it's another match for him to win. Unless the opponent, if Forbidden Door opponent is Rush, which it might be. Since he is still, you know, half in AAA, I think.
I believe he is. Well, and I think that's the other thing that hurts him.
And yes, exactly.
Their product in general. Like, it's just like, oh, yeah. They just don't do a great job of planning around those absences. Like, you can have them, but someone needs to have a hard out if they're not going to be around here, guys. Not asking for that much. So, next up on the docket, I'm not even sure. This is classic AEW. Rey Fénix, Jay Lethal, Orange Cassidy, and Kyle O'Reilly. Good match.
Not Rey Fénix. Or was it Rey Fénix? That was Panda.
Yes, is Rey Fénix.
Wow, I completely forgot which one of them it was. Wow. Wow.
Yep, I am.
Holy
not,
crap.
I am not misreading the report.
Oh, wow. How little that show resonated with me. Is wow. The only thing that resonates with me is that, man, I don't like what they're doing with Orange Cassidy. He's not the guy who gets beat down every week, and, you know, that's just not what his role needs to be in a blood feud. You know, I mean, it's like a double whammy of suck with Trent Beretta and Don Callis involved.
It's super hard. The story is fine. Obviously, they've had at least something of a friendship over, you know, a course of time. And knowing that Trent Barrett is a loser, though, it really hurts on the investment in this storyline in any way, shape, or form.
Right. And they're intermingling the Chris Statlander, Willow Nightingale feud in with this, so there's probably going to be a mixed tag down the way. You know, which might be fine, kind of. I'm just not digging the chemistry with Stokely and Chris Statlander. I just don't think there really is any.
I don't know. I guess we'll find. I kind of like the taunting this week, but I don't know. Stokely Hathaway has still been one of those things that the online jokes are great. What I've seen on screen does not completely translate to me.
No, it has never translated. It really has not translated at all.
So, it's kind of interesting. So. I mean, I guess the only good thing, I really did like Willow's answer to everything.
Willow's promo was good. Yeah, I like Willow's promo. And yes, before we move on, yes, Rey Fénix did win the match, and he will be facing Will Ospreay for the international title next week. You know, the international title, the belt Will Ospreay didn't need.
I guess he's gonna try to make it great again. You know, the belt that Orange Cassidy made great, but they pooped on. I guess they're trying to reboot it again.
I don't. But then Ospreay's in this match with Swerve for the big one. Oh. And I'm thinking he's gonna win it. We're not to that part of the show yet that made me think that, but. Yeah, interesting. We already covered the Blackpool Combat Club against the CML contingent, so I guess we can move on to Bryan Danielson's promo where he
talk about that match.
Yes. No, so Bryan Danielson's promo where he said he was going to win the Owen Hart Pup Tournament, or Foundation Tournament, whatever, however they say it, and Challenge at Wembley, which just immediately got me in my head thinking, they're going to run Danielson versus Ospreay for the title at Wembley. Sorry, Swerve.
Yeah, it was an interesting, because was it this week that Swerve was defending his booking against Mark Henry? Because what are they on, Busted Open Radio?
Yeah.
Oh, man, yeah, if he loses to Will Ospreay and it ends up being Ospreay and Danielson at, is that all? Yeah, that's All In, right?
That's All In, yes.
Yeah, so, woof. Yeah, I mean, that to me is towing a company line. If you're saying you were booked okay.
Well, it does sound like Swerve is going to be put into the Elite storyline in the coming weeks. But I'm saying that, you know, if you want to put together a team to go against the Elite, you should give me a call.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's something.
Yeah.
It's still always awkward to me to have the champion involved in a giant brawl match.
Yeah.
You know, not.
But he may not be the champion anyway. By the time that happens.
This is also very true. I mean,
he may not be champion in 2.5 weeks.
I mean, they have not pushed anyone like Will Ospreay ever.
Ever since.
Well, I mean, I guess no one's come in with this much.
Yeah.
Cachet. Like, I don't know. Yeah, Okada evidently didn't care, or has been on top so long. Yeah, he's probably been on top so long he doesn't care, but Will Ospreay cares a little bit more currently, or at least that's the story I'm going to go with.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So, yeah, like, Ospreay has really been shot out of a cannon and has done nothing but win.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, Swerve has not had the best championship run so far.
For sure. No, not at all.
Like, he can defend what he wants to, but, oof, man. Yeah. Getting the immediate title defense against someone who is completely beneath him and then having a 50-50 match. Ugh. Boo. Yeah. Losing it and then still getting in the Elite storyline, I mean, it's always important to be involved in the top of the card. That still just does not seem like an ideal outcome, though.
No.
In my estimation, I would rather be Will Ospreay in this situation.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it is going to be interesting to see how this ends up shaking out. Because yeah, like I. It would be kind of weird to see Ospreay lose this one.
It would seem, because then he's not... Yeah, that's definitely a... Because then he'd have to lose, go in the One Heart Tournament, and he'd have to win that, but then Danielson wouldn't. And I don't think they're going to have Danielson not fulfill his prophecy, or however you want to say it.
Oh,
I mean, it spoils the whole tournament, but you just can't have a guy like Danielson make a promise like that and then blow it. Especially when you know he's in the final months of his regular career. He wants the big match at Wembley because he was injured and missed Wembley last year.
Yeah. Yes, I believe.
Hilariously, he was cleared to Russell the week later to replace Punk. I guess Ricky Starks. But he did end up missing Wembley. So, and it's important. Wembley's important to him. I think, was it that the October pay-per-views in Seattle or Tacoma or something? So that's, you know, his hometown, which is where he'll, you know, go into semi-retirement from there. I mean, that all makes sense. And, you know, at least giving him the shot at the title one last time, whether he wins it or not, because that's a good number of title changes in a short period. If he does beat Ospreay just 2 months after Ospreay wins the title, who already was beating Swerve 2 months after he won the title?
I guess that's happened in the UFC, if you want to go that kind of route. But definitely seems weird in this day and age of long title reigns, even in AEW, honestly, for the most part.
MJF had been champion for over a year.
Yeah.
We lost to Samoa Joe.
Yeah, and Orange Cassidy had a pretty long run that first time as international champion.
It was at least over 6 months. Yeah.
Yeah. So there have definitely been. They've at least had their share of them. The WWE has been more of the perpetrator, I guess, in that regard. But still, trying to think about what the long title reigns had to do with everything. All the 2 month title reigns that could be in the offing here.
Yeah.
Danielson does seem to not mind putting the guy over. I would not be surprised if he'd end up losing to Ospreay.
Yeah.
It also wouldn't surprise me. It feels like the Sting retirement was one of the few things that AEW did right on the way out.
Yeah, boy.
I feel like whatever they have up their sleeve for Bryan Danielson, or basically whatever he has up his own sleeve, should work out fairly well, you know, barring injuries in the meantime. You know, like, I feel like they'll actually treat this well, and it's going to be one of those few things that's an actual story arc over, you know, because what did you say? Is September Seattle?
I think October is, because then September is All Out is Chicago. Which they're doing 2 weeks after Wembley this year, instead of one. So it's not Labor Day weekend.
I think that is smart of them to push it back a week.
That's right. I was kind of going to be in Chicago Labor Day weekend anyway. Yeah. I'm going to a Pearl Jam concert at Wembley that weekend.
Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, which was funny, because that would have been All Out weekend. I would have been in Chicago, although, of course, AEW doesn't.
Definitely go to Pearl Jam over AEW.
Right, of course. That's not a question. And then, no, that's right. AEW still uses that the former Sears Arena.
Yes.
For that one. They don't go to the United Center for that. And I'm thinking they're probably going to avoid the United Center for a little while. That's a big building they can't fill.
They're even in right now are too large for them.
Yeah, which is why MJF being back is so important for since Forbidden Door had to go to Long Island again for their second pay per view in like a little over 6 months, 6-7 months in Long Island. But MJF, it should help.
Oh man, okay. So that That takes care of that stuff. I did not really care about the Mark Briscoe and Brian Cage qualifier for the TNT title at Forbidden Door. I mean, Brian Cage is the most muscly enhancement talent on anyone's roster.
Yeah, I mean he's not worth much more than that.
Yep. So there's that. Did Jeremy and I wear you down? Well, actually, I feel like I have been sufficiently worn down by Chris Jericho at this point.
Yeah, no, it was funny. The skits he was doing were funny. Now, next week, when he goes back to the ring, and again, we're going to try and make Private Party a thing, which has not worked for 5 years. And he really turns it on, just turns on his full Jericho, the Jericho-ness. Maybe that won't be as this. These doses were amusing enough, but
Yeah,
yeah.
his best work is not in the ring currently.
No.
And I still think that despite this finally getting my attention and being at least mildly amusing, I think a break in the offing would be the best thing for him.
No, he's well. No. He's gonna be leading his 17th faction in AEW. Because I assume Private Party's joining too, or however that's gonna work. I have no idea.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, I guess he already honestly has a faction already since he's got Brian Keith and Big Bill now. I mean,
Yeah.
three people's enough for a faction. Good Lord, that man has had just a poop ton of factions.
He's at least at three, two.
I would call this the third for sure. The Jericho Appreciation Society and what was
The Inner Circle.
the Inner Circle? Yes. So that to me is three in 5 years in AEW. Good Lord, man. He has a faction addiction, that is for sure. Yeah. I don't know. I guess is this still gonna be a vortex though? Like, I mean, A, I'm amused that he's actually calling it a vortex, but also I don't feel great for anyone involved still, because is this just gonna like in the ring it's gonna end up sucking, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. When the bell rings, yeah. No, it's going to go very poorly.
It's like the opposite of what I say about most AEW stuff. There's no story, but it's going to be great in ring. This is there is story, but it's going to suck in ring. So yeah, there is that. Oh man, the women's division is still just I don't know what to think about it, honestly, because we end up getting Mariah May gets in the middle of a love triangle while Toni Storm has another. Does she have another title defense lined up?
Yeah, with Mina Shirakawa. So that's the love triangle
Yeah.
of it. Yeah, I don't know what to say about some of this. First of all, anytime Saray gets a win, does cry. I'm begging Tony. I also, it's a little thing because he really does nothing, but I'm begging Tony Khan to learn the word no when someone comes up to him and says, "Hey, you should bring in so and so." Because now we've got Soraya's no talent idiot brother just tagging along, getting a paycheck for bringing nothing to the table.
He is a bigger version of Brandon Cutler.
Yeah.
That is all he is. Like, they tried to make something out of it, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I see why the WWE decided to say no to this Joker and said, well, I no longer see why the WWE said yes to her, but I did when she debuted, so.
Yes, 10 years ago.
Oh, man, that, yeah, it's, that division's just a mess.
And then, I guess I kind of just don't like what they do with Mariah May, where she just has to lose all these matches to set up Tony Storm storylines, making her seem ineffective in the ring, that she can't, you know, fight her own battles. And they do this repeatedly. Then of course, you know, they'll come Shirakawa, and then they're fighting for, you know, Mariah May's affections with the breast stuff. Like, that's just no other way to describe it.
No, it's impossible to get around. Like, this is one where it's just if the women are in charge of this, you're just going, okay, like, I guess this isn't supposed to be one of those correct, like, this is the way Tony Khan runs his operation. It's just like,
I guess runs, so. I mean,
runs the storyline.
Look, it's just there's like, no, I mean, the sexualization of the women in AEW, if it's the way they want to present themselves, fine. And it is a tricky issue to criticize it like that if it is a lot coming from them. But there's also the issue of, to me, that crowd last month in Edmonton that got out of control with drunk guys, you know, just saying vulgar things to the women. And I don't know if you're necessarily sending the message that that element isn't welcome. It's a tricky thing, but it's a little you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. They're trying to walk a fine line, and Tony doesn't know. Well, they don't know how to walk a fine line.
No, they don't.
So, it's definitely an interesting storyline to have going on there. That's another one, though, that Shirakawa, like, I don't want to know what these people are doing to their bodies, doing trans-Pacific and or transatlantic flights this frequently. Because Shirakawa keeps on going over to do stuff back in Japan and then pops back over here.
Right.
But, you know, again, like, it's... AEW doesn't build around that. Like, if you're going to build, like, you need to, I guess Shahid and I talked about it a little bit, like, almost all of the wrestling that we've liked, even in the Hulk Hogan days, had some type of story involved.
Yeah.
And I guess it really is getting to that point where, I guess I'm realizing how little, like, it was just, like, fun with AEW, like, hey, we're going to be the wrestling place, and it's just like, I want a little bit more than this, guys. And it's just really hurting even the in-ring product for me at this point.
Yeah, and then, of course, this is trying to put story to it. But, like, with anything that Tony Storm is involved in, you can't take it seriously? I mean, at the end of the day, no one behaves like this.
I guess that is my biggest problem, is it's just kind of the whole, like you said, like, people don't behave like that. Even if they all, you know, one likes the other and one likes the other, you know, just from different locations.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
It's a weird setup that they have going.
And then complicating things further is when Toni Storm refers to Mariah May as her child, and then they're kissing on the lips. And they're rubbing her breasts on each other's heads.
I mean, Toni Storm even did the I'm gonna present my cheek, but then turned to kiss her on the lips before she went to the ring.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, but this is it's weird once again. Like, I don't know if WWE is doing a storyline that's a little more risque than they have over the recent years with Liv Morgan and Dominic Mysterio, but it's still being played like people would play in that situation. They're not. Yeah. I mean, it's not Dominic's like Liv Morgan is
trying to resist, at least, but Liv Morgan's being a tease for sure.
Yeah, she's being a tease in a way that a person would believably be a tease. Maybe, you know, with the volume turned up, of course, for television purposes. Right. And for fiction purposes, but this is just no one behaves like this. No one caresses a person in their breasts like that. That's not something people do. That's not something like cats do and dogs do. That's not something people do.
Yes, I'm not sure that even the handful of lesbian friends that I've had have just sat there caressing each other's breasts in public. Yeah. It's kind of a weird setup, to say the least. It is a very, very weird setup. And I guess speaking of weird setups, we kind of referred to it a little bit. The fact that Roderick Strong is even getting an AEW World Championship shot on this show is something that amazes me.
Yeah, it's just nothing they do with him is ever going to work again. I've never seen someone be made so much of a clown as he was last year. And there's just no turning back from it. And then, of course, he's got the other two clowns with him. Wardlow's nowhere to be seen. Which, poor Wardlow.
Well, that's it. Honestly, when I saw someone come out in a suit and brown hair, I'm like, oh, Wardlow's coming out. Like, he's been, like, the whole thing was I'm pissed at MJF and I need
to back out. Why isn't he MJF's first feud back? It's not like he can't take a loss. But at least you can close that loop.
Yeah.
And MJF's never beaten him, so you can do that.
Yeah, it all works out for everyone, honestly. Because like you said, he should be on the first train to WWE land whenever his contract is up. Because if he isn't, he's at least a crazy person to at least not take that chance, in my opinion. At least the only thing I'd say good about this Swerve and Roderick Strong match is that at least Swerve won.
Yeah, he did win.
And I think that can wrap up our AEW portion of the show, unless there's something else that you can think of.
Nope.
As far as NXT goes, we have got NXT Battleground this Sunday at the UFC Apex, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah, so we definitely got some crossover action and happening here in multiple ways, quite honestly. So not only are they at the UFC's facility and nothing that is of a surprise here, we got some actual UFC fighters to weigh in on the Lola Vice versus Shayna Baszler match, the NXT Underground match that will be coming up at Battleground.
Yep.
So I just love these in general in WWE at this point. Their video packages have been killing it recently, and this one was on that same level there, to me. Like, I thought they did a great job of describing what's gonna end up happening in this matchup here.
Yeah, no, they definitely, their video packages are very well done. You could they're even in, done in a different style than they're done in WWE, which the main roster stuff, which they could certainly move some of that over, but at the same time, it also makes NXT unique. Yeah, no, can't say I'm the most excited about this NXT Underground match because it just doesn't feel like anything that important, really. I haven't really fully, I haven't fully embraced the Levice at this yet, and Shayna Baszler is just, she's Shayna Baszler.
Yeah,
You know what you're gonna get from Shayna Baszler?
she's a known commodity at this point. Like, she's going to serve her purpose and probably not be much more than that.
Right.
So, do we want to do a prediction type show here and pick a winner for this one, despite not being at least on your end terribly sucked in by the storyline on this?
Yeah, that's we could main roster people very rarely come to NXT to lose. So I'm gonna say Shayna will win.
Yeah, I'm gonna go other side. I'm thinking that Lola Vice ends up going over, and Shayna joins back up with her tag team partner Zoe Stark with little to no effect.
Yeah.
So that is my take on that one. Let's see here. I guess speaking of main roster people, let's stay on that route there. The OC, Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson, challenging Nathan Frazer and Axiom for the NXT Tag Team Championships. Do you think your theorem holds true here? Do you think the OC ends up coming away with the Tag Team Championships here?
No, actually, I don't. I think Frazier and Axiom will retain here.
Yeah, it this just seems like a way to get these guys even more experience. Like, it is kind of interesting since these guys wrestled in NXT UK and now have been in regular NXT for a little while now. Like, they're starting to be a like the young veteran type of situation. Honestly, within the WWE's hierarchy. So yeah, I feel like they need a win to help maybe legitimize their title reign here. Although, oof, just tag team championships in general have been a little bit tough to legitimize recently. So yeah, we both agree on that outcome there. Man, there are all championship matches to talk about after this here still too. The one that is listed number one here on the Wikipedia is the North American Championship for the NXT Women's Gold here, We got six people involved: Sol Ruka, Lash Legend, Fallon Henley, Jada Parker, Mi Jin, and Kalani Jordan. They got a segment together, then they got a match together. I feel like the talking segment was pretty standard, but the whole two baby faces and one heel and two heels and one baby face team was an interesting take on some otherwise standard procedures here.
Yeah, but are some of them, you know, really your standard heels or baby faces? Is Lash Legend straddling the fence right now?
Yeah, she's straddling the fence a little bit right now, I would say. When you have that much interaction with Trick Williams in mostly in a positive light on that end, it's hard to be completely heelish.
Right. Yeah. I don't really have much to say about what they did or about this at all. It's just, you know, once again, they've been building this up. They've been setting this up. It's going to happen. I mean, big ladder matches, you know, usually aren't boring, certainly.
Oh.
So yeah. we'll get some big spots in this. And I'll predict Lash Legend.
I think that's a solid one. Because I think the top three that they list in this match to me are the three most likely candidates to win: Sol Ruka, Lash Legend, and Fallon Henley. Jada Parker seems a little too early for her to be getting the gold. It does not, to me, seem like Mi Jin is the one to be the first champ in this situation. And I don't know if Kalani Jordan's in the too early mode still, but I guess I'd still be a little bit surprised. She has not been pushed quite as much since her debut. So I feel like the other three are there. I'm going to go with, since Booker T likes her, I'm going to go Fallon Henley, despite my better judgment.
Okay. That's a good pick.
My personal pick would be Sol Ruka. She's one of my favorites down there in NXT. So, but yeah, I think Fallon Henley ends up coming away. She's out there for herself, and I think that would kind of be the icing on the cake for that that story of patting herself on the back. There's a lot of back patting going on, no matter who you look at. In the NXT Men's North American Championship triple threat match. No short of confidence in Obafemi, Wesley, or Joe Coffey.
Yeah, I don't know. This should be pretty good. The last time Obafemi was in a triple threat, it was really good, although there's less meaty men in this with Wesley in there. But it's just the dynamics should still work. Not the biggest Joe Coffey or Gallus fan at all, but I don't think he'll completely sneak up the joint here either. And I guess Obafemi retains again.
Yeah, I really feel like this is a Obafemi retains situation here. Triple threats to me seem pretty notorious for that. Because I don't see Wesley just regaining the championship that easily, especially in a three-way match. It wouldn't be completely out of the realm of possibility of Gallus getting involved and costing Oba in one way or the other. You could have Wesley get pinned while there are some shenanigans with Gallus involved to even cover him in that situation. So that isn't out there. But yeah, my pick, though, is Oba winning this one. Because, yeah, he does not seem like they're going to give up on his championship reign anytime soon.
No, and we're not – we don't have a regime in charge of WWE who's going to say, just look at him and bring him up too early.
Yeah, I think they've been pretty wise to do the whole – you got to do a babyface run, got to do a heel run, or at least a change in gimmick situation. And I feel like Obafemi's going to have to go through that change at some juncture. But that's way, way too early in this initial run to even be concerned about that. Next up is the crossover match here. Roxanne Perez defends her NXT Women's Championship against Jordynne Grace of TNA. Do you think that there's any chance that the TNA champion pulls this off and they are intermingling TNA and NXT more than maybe anyone expected?
There might be something here to this. I can't take it far enough to say that I think that Roxanne's going to lose here, although her title reign has left a lot to be desired. And as well as her heel run, it's just not her. she's trying to be Cora Jade, basically.
Well,
Cora Jade's out.
Her and Trick, and I feel like I've definitely talked a bit with Jeremy about this, that Roxanne and Trick are stuck in the same situation where they're at the top of the power structure, but all of their peers have moved on to the main roster.
Yeah, and they're Bayley in 2016, basically.
Yeah, they're just sitting there like, what? I feel like you could do even that Pulp Fiction meme with John Travolta looking around doing the what the fuck.
But at least 2016 had Asuka on the rise.
Oh, yeah.
Roxanne, in this particular, has nobody.
Well, everyone's
in this damn ladder match.
Yeah, the ladder match has certainly hurt Roxanne. Like, you could have thrown one of them at her, I would think. Especially, you could have thrown Mee Chin at her for a full... Because I'm trying to think if they actually had a match, but I don't think they did.
Well, that's still bringing somebody in from the outside to challenge her, though.
Well, yeah, same concept, but...
But this is very... It does feel like there's just something going on here. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if... Well... Right before we recorded, it's announced that on TNA's special, I think, not this week, I think it's the week after, that's on exclusively on TNA Plus, against All Odds, I think it is. It's so confusing how they do these shows that are available with your TNA Plus, regular TNA Plus subscription.
Oh.
But then there's like the four or five like big pay-per-views of the year, and you have to like spend over $200 for an annual subscription to get those with on the app, instead really of like ordering it individually on like Fight or whatever.
Okay.
Which I assume there's a discount there if you do that. I imagine there has to be.
Yeah. I'd have to ask Jeremy, since he's paid for them on Fight, he would know what the price tag is, but I do not offhand.
Yeah, they're offering a deal for like $4.99 for their monthly for 2 months. That would get you like the shows like Against All Odds, but I'm still like I don't need this much more. I don't need more wrestling. Although, and I'm probably not gonna go back and watch old TNA.
Oh yeah, I don't watch old.
There's some good stuff there
that I grew up watching. I am definitely not watching old TNA.
I mean, there is some obviously some good stuff along the way, but yeah. But bottom line, TNA's next major show that they're doing,
oh,
in next weekend, weekend after this, it said that Jordan Grace is going to make an open challenge. So people are predicting like Natalya is going to be the person, the designated person for WWE who gets to go over to TNA and lose to Jordan Grace to make up for Jordan Grace coming in to lose to Roxanne Perez.
Well, I mean, that's one way to settle matters. You know, because that is the million-dollar question in these crossover matches. Like, how do you make up for the other person's champion losing the match?
Like, right.
You know, when you have a non-champion fight, they can someone can eat a loss. But when there are two champions involved, things get a little more hairy in the in the booking department.
Yeah, I don't know if this relationship is going to be. No, I have heard that Jordan Grace is committed to at least one more NXT match this summer.
Yeah, it sounded like there is at least a little bit more involved in her run, if you want to call it that.
I mean, I guess if Roxanne is going up before SummerSlam. It's a possibility that Jordan could win, and that they're gonna run with this for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean that is the funny thing. This one I'm a little more unsure of than every other outcome, honestly.
Yeah. Plus, there's also people who are gonna speculate that WWE is gonna buy TNA shortly, and there was some like cryptic stuff about TNA, you know, cutting costs and, you know, laying people off and, you know, off more office and production people, things like that, that, you know, maybe something is in the works there. It wouldn't totally surprise. Once again, nothing would totally surprise me. But TNA does seem to be, you know, reprioritizing their own streaming service, which maybe they wouldn't necessarily do that if it was all going to be end up on Peacock in the coming months.
Yeah, I mean it's hard to say.
But we'll see. As of right now, the deal is only for Jordan Grace. There's no one else. Looks like it's going to be involved at all.
Oh, right.
But I will. With all this said, I'm still going to predict Roxanne.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that there is an air of possibility there, just because, pretty much the reason you listed. Like, Roxanne getting called up would be the least surprising thing there. So, I think that she's winning. And, Jordan Grace gets a win back with her open challenge. And then last matchup for NXT Battleground, Trick Williams taking on the newly signed Ethan Page. Feel pretty confident that the champion is retaining in this one.
Yeah, I feel pretty confident in that as well. I mean, it's interesting to bring somebody in just to lose in less than 2 weeks after their debut. But it's Ethan Page. I mean, I joked with Jeremy last week. It's like Jeremy's like, yeah, this is, you know, nobody expected this. They kept this really hidden. I of course had to be a smart ass answer back with, you know, no one was exactly asking about the the whereabouts and the future plans of Ethan Page.
I mean, he certainly has a following.
He's fine. I've never had a problem with him. He's there's nothing wrong with him. It's just, but he's also not top guy material either.
I think that he's in a perfect spot with NXT.
Yeah, I think he'll. It's gonna be another thing where he loses to Trick and then slides down the card from there. I just don't know if he's going to be more to NXT than another Sean Spears.
That to me is what I think that he basically is down there. just the younger version. You know, yeah. he's a veteran that can work with the younger guys, but doesn't, you know, like, he isn't that big of a name, so he's going to be a fresh name to most of the people that are watching him in NXT.
Yeah, he's less of a name than Sean Spears.
Even. Yeah, so I think he's in a good spot, and even if he does end up eating this L, I think that he can at least bounce back to what they're expecting out of him. Like, I don't think he's going to end up WWE World Champion by the end of his WWE run here.
I mean, I imagine his next feud would probably be with Noam Dar to get revenge for the injury.
Yeah, oh, that would make a great deal of sense.
Yeah, and then Trick, again, it doesn't feel like they're setting anyone up for Trick still. I mean, there's no big men's match on the show Sunday that's going to determine the next number one contender or anything of the sort.
The diversion of priorities for Gallus was kind of weird, where Joe Coffey's in the North American match, but he's also referenced getting the world championship match, and they're talking about the tag team championships. At least,
well, that would be for the other two, of course. But
right, yeah, that's for Joe, not Joe. What?
Mark Coffey?
Yeah,
Mark and Wolfgang.
Yep.
Okay. Woo! I got it right.
I have a harder time remembering Mark's name than I do Wolfgang.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, to me, that's still kind of a weird thing to even throw out there, because with Wesley back, it seems like you can have more challengers to step up to Obafemi, because there isn't as big of a step to get up to him as there is to get up to Trick. And I feel like Joe Coffey could have pulled that off, I guess, is where I'm going with this one. Like, would I have thought that he's going to win? No. But, you know, at least you can tell the three-on-one story, and it'd make the matchup believable.
Because NXT follows what's been tradition. They'll run the Great American Bash as a TV special in July, where if they do 1 or 2 weeks or whatever, Trick will be expected to defend his title against somebody there.
No.
And then there's the Heat Wave. That's going to be the night after SummerSlam in Cleveland.
Oh. Yeah, that's two matchups that they really don't have anyone lined up for, except for maybe Coffey. Like, he's the only one even in that conversation right now.
Right. Well, that brings up something. Have you thought about going down on to Cleveland just on Sunday, just for NXT, and then turning around and going back instead of going to SummerSlam?
It would probably be more fun, but I doubt that I would. I would probably have to take Monday off just due to the. I'm too old for that bullshit. Is basically what it comes down to.
Yeah.
I'm sure I could drive back here after that and get back here at a not completely unreasonable time. But yeah, I don't want to do that these days. So have not thought about that. Oh, yeah, and I probably won't, because I'll just have been on vacation like a couple of weeks before that. So, yeah, probably not taking a day. Anything else to talk about before I talk about beer, sir?
No, I think we're good.
I guess the only one, the one thing that I did think about, because I think I saw it on the on Twitter/X, Asuka definitely out for a while. She posted a picture of her, definitely her knee, post surgery. So I'm assuming that she still has a while for recovery. Not sure that they've made it completely clear what level of surgery, but I would still think that with that type of a picture that it's not going to be a quick recovery here. So that was the only thing I could think of offhand. So there's that. Well wishes to Asuka. We love you. Come back sooner rather than later. So Bell Time Beer, you know, Aslan Beer Company, you can find them either in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, or their home base is down in Washington, D.C., and they even have a production facility down in Alexandria, Virginia, which is just south of D.C. there. Their sauce line is very tasty. The wife fell in love with one called Volcano Sauce when we were down in Washington, D.C. and tried it for the first time. So when we were in Pittsburgh most recently, we stopped in at their branch there and we got Lunar Sauce. It's a sour ale with blackberry, lime, milk sugar, and vanilla. It is extremely delicious. It has a great blackberry bite to it. There is definitely some tanginess in the back from the lime, and you get a little bit of sweetness out of that vanilla, and it really kind of helps highlight all of the fruits in there. The milk sugar always helps out in the cutting the edge a little bit on the sourness, since it's a little sweet itself. So yeah, should you find yourself in Pittsburgh or Washington, D.C., you can check out Aslan Beer Company. They make some very, very good beers. So that is at DeFrango 11's Bell Time Beer for the show. He is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any other locations, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, or YouTube Music. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.